Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Visual Studio for Mac Talk. My name is Miguel de Casa, and I run the engineering group for Xamarin and Visual Studio for Mac at Microsoft. And my co-presenter is Joseph Hill. He's the head of PM, the product management for the Xamarin platform. Yep. Same thing. So first off, you saw the announcement today. We're releasing Visual Studio for Mac as our 1.0 product as of today. We've been in preview showing Visual Studio, and we had multiple reviews during the preview process since November. We've collected a lot of feedback from you. Thank you for all of you that provided comments, suggestions, and bug reports. So let's get started.
So the reason we're here today, Visual Studio for Mac launch this morning. We're very excited about that. Exactly. One of the most popular IDEs in the world, now available to Mac developers. It's a product launch. This is the first slide, so we distilled everything down to 3 points.
We distilled it down to 3 points.
That's what I'm saying, yes. Cue the next slide. That's
yes.
The animation.
Do I have to point it somewhere else?
I don't know, man.
Oh, all right, maybe I clicked too many times.
Don't drift too far from the laptop there. So we like to call Visual Studio for Mac a mobile-first, cloud-first IDE. We put the emphasis on modern app development. Mobile apps, games, you're going to be able to do that in Visual Studio for Mac. And, of course, server apps and services to the cloud, you know, we got that. We've also put a fair amount of emphasis on enabling teams to collaborate. I mean, that's really the big story here. Visual Studio solution and project support, so teams can collaborate. First-class support for GitHub. Great experience for heterogeneous teams working across Mac and Windows. And of course, we put it all in a package that's a native experience that's uniquely Mac.
Yep. And one thing that I wanted to mention is as we, all right. So as we started to work, as we started to work on this, the heritage of Visual Studio for Mac goes back to an open source project that was a full IDE that we used to power Xamarin Studio, right? But we've continued to evolve it. In the past year at Microsoft, we've evolved this product and we've integrated a lot of code that comes from Visual Studio. That is a common question. Isn't this just a rebranding? It is a rebranding, but B, we started to transfer a lot of the DNA from Visual Studio into Visual Studio for Mac. One of the things that to me was most impressive was that the we're looking at ways of sharing code, and what I consider one of the crown jewels of Visual Studio is the text editor in Visual Studio. And we took a look at that thing, and I thought this is going to be all WPF code. It's going to have some COM stuff there. It's going to be impossible to port. And it turns out that that is not the case. It's an incredibly well-designed, well-structured component. It's completely isolated. It's a text editor as a component that has no UI dependencies of any kind. And what we saw over and over with the Visual Studio code is just how well architected it was and how easy it was to port it, to port all this code over to Unix. In a few cases, there's a handful of Windows dependencies, but using .NET was surprisingly a good choice when you're building cross-platform apps.
Well, I'm looking at this architecture slide, and I'm thinking, you're talking about the Visual Studio architecture. Mm-hmm. They did a good job, but they actually complimented our engineers as well because they have a pretty good architecture as well for extensibility. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what made it really straightforward for them to land features at the rate that they have.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that's...
Now, I put together this slide this morning because... And that's why you can see this beautiful design. That's why I'm on engineering and not on the design team. But I wanted to draw attention to a couple of things here. The core of Visual Studio for Mac is a shell. It's a shell application that is designed to load extensions. So one thing that people don't actually know is that the editing capabilities, the project system, everything you see on the screen, it's actually an extension. It's not on the core. So we have a very simple core, and everything is a plugin, right? I didn't put everything, but these are some of the things that we have in there. And over the past year, like I said, we've been replacing some of the internals of the IDE with some technologies from Visual Studio and from technologies that the Dot team has built. So for example, we completely replaced code completion, and now it's entirely powered by Roslyn. We completely took away our all build system, which was called XBuild, and now we're using the real MSBuild compiler. Starting with the Visual Studio for Mac release today, we now support C# 7. As of yesterday, Mac users did not have support for C# 7, so we got all of that great goodness starting today. And you know, on the evenings, I have a pet project of mine, and I was building it with the old version, and it became very obvious that I needed local functions. For a while, I've been telling Matt, why do we use local functions? He uses that stuff. And then I had an epiphany. Local functions are actually incredibly useful. So I've been very happily dogfooding our product in the last few months. So the other thing that I want to draw attention to is that today our shell is actually implemented using two separate toolkits. We're using the GTK toolkit, which is a cross-platform toolkit, and we're also using Coco. So there are pieces of the code base that still use a GTK cross-platform toolkit, and everything else has been moved over to be a native Mac application. This is important because it still gives us a possibility of running this on Linux, for example.
Oh, okay. I was like, are there other operating systems? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Or Visual Studio for Mac. Yeah, all right. Don't want to get in trouble here. All right, so let's talk a little bit about, I'm going to start today with client development, and we'll talk extensively about this because this is very close to my heart. One, the architecture that we've been promoting for people when they're building applications is build as much of your logic in C#, just like Visual Studio had this very well-architected editor component, write all of your reusable code in C#, and then to maximize the user experience and the end finish and the polish of the application, you build different heads. You can build an Android head, you can build a macOS head, iOS head, a Linux head, Windows, or even a web UI, right? And this is the architecture that we've been using, and this is something that we've embedded into Visual Studio for Mac. We're going to make it simply for you to start adopting this, this coding pattern. Have a shared code logic, and then build multiple UIs. Now, some of you do need to get multiple UIs at once, and you don't necessarily want to write a special UI for every one of those. So for that, we get Xamarin Forms, and we have a full session on Thursday, I believe, that goes through everything
you'll want to be there.
Xamarin Forms. Yes, you want to be there. All right, let me switch to the Mac, and I'll give you a little tour of some of the client capabilities that we have here. So this is Visual Studio for Mac. As you can tell, it's a uniquely Mac experience. While it's Visual Studio, we have adopted and embraced the idioms of the Mac OS. We got a menu that it's a global menu that everybody uses. The preferences are in the right place. We use the key shortcuts and combinations that are common on Mac OS. And let me show you now how you create a solution. This might be familiar to some of you and not to some of others, but essentially, these are the templates that we have on the project. We put a strong emphasis on mobile, on client developments. For example, apps, you can create different sort of applications, and you can choose your favorite language. Some of us like C#, some of us like F#, so we support both of those, and we'll give you templates for both of those. We also have projects for Android, so if you want to create just an iOS app, we got your back. Just Android, we got your back. .NET Core, we'll talk about that more later. Or you can create native Mac applications or tvOS applications, and we have other ones there. Now, the idiom that I was referring to is this idiom where you essentially want to create multiple heads, right? This design pattern that I described. And we got a couple of samples here. You can either create them with this write once, enjoy everywhere approach, which is called Xamarin Forms, or you can go with the native applications. Let me start with a blank native application just to show you some of the capabilities that we have here. So let's call this build 2017.
Really?
What? Yes, very original. And as you can see, I want to point you out to something. This is my actual machine. You can see on the screen, this is my actual machine. This is not a demo machine, so.
So you can see all of the side projects.
You can see my side projects. You can see, I'm hoping that nobody messages me because it will be embarrassing. You can see a picture of my daughter. So this is the real thing. This is what I use at home when I'm working on this stuff. Now, So essentially what we've done, what we have here is we have three projects. We have one project that contains a shared code base. We have then a dedicated Android head, and we have a dedicated iOS head. And in each one of these, you find the stuff that that most people expect, right? You got your reference components, so you have libraries that you're consuming. In this case, Mono than Android. I mean, this is a very familiar solution pad. We get components, we get your packages. So if you want to get some NuGet packages, you can get it out here. And of course, I need to connect to the network. As you can see, I'm not connected to the network, so I should look into that.
That's not going to have any impact on future.
That is not going to have any impact on my demo. All right. It's not going to have any impact on my demo, right? It
better not.
All right. If it does, you'll see me configuring networking on macOS. It's very illustrative for those of you that are new. Then so for example, when some of the capabilities for Android are things that you want to configure specifically for Android. Where am I? Am I clicking the right place? Yeah, so you got things. These are all your build settings that you're familiar with on Windows. It's a little bit different than Visual Studio. It's a more Mac-ish UI. And here are the Android-specific build capabilities. Linker capabilities, code generation, static compilation, full static compilation. We'll cover a lot of those tomorrow in the Xamarin session. So I won't go through all of this here, nor tomorrow. I don't want to bore you out of your minds.
Sell it.
Yeah. No, we'll talk about exciting stuff tomorrow, so you should come. Now, the so one of the things that everybody wants to do is you want to have a UI designer. So we have a UI designer for Android, and we have a full UI designer for iOS. And each one of those uses different idioms, different techniques that are native to the platform. We start with this very simple template, and you can see here that you can choose the form factor. So this is the same kind of experience that you would get for something like Android Studio. So you can choose different resolutions, you can test it on different devices, you can test your application on different orientations if you have to. One thing that we did in the last year is that this entire rendering surface is now using the native platform. We used to have our own frame buffer. Now this is powered by Core Image and Core Animation. So I can spend hours here just with this beautiful animation there. And let me change this to be a little bit smaller because that's, all right, something like this. And here you can go and we're going to help you build an application that abides by the Android platform idioms, right? So one thing that it's very common these days, it's actually material design. So if you're building an Android app and you want to feel at home on Android, one of the things that you got to do is embrace the design guidelines from Google. And Google has essentially said material design is the way to build this thing. So you'll find a lot of these capabilities built into the IDE. You can go and change some of these colors. You can, all of these values that you see here and all this palette, it's actually the material design palette. And you're supposed to design with this thing. I won't go into the details of what you have to do this, but we have great documentation on our website for this. So essentially, we embrace the platform when you create these native applications. We give you full access to everything that is there. Now, you'll notice that I got a little warning here, and it's saying the current theme has unsaved changes. So when you do changes directly here that apply to the whole thing, you are making changes to a theme. And what is nice about that is that I can just turn this into a theme, right? And now you can load it dynamically at runtime. So you can design the theme for your app right from here, and then you can just change it. I want to use the custom theme, or I want to use the default theme. And you can see how those two work together. So this is a built-in capability of Android. And in fact, this puts a file somewhere here. I think it's here. Yeah, it puts it right there, theme.xml. So we generated the theme XML file for you directly. Now, there's a couple of other things. If you don't want to put that in the theme, right? So if you feel very strongly that something has to be of a particular thing, you can go directly here, right? You can go directly here to the properties of your object, and then you can say, well, you know what? I want the foreground or the background to be a specific thing. So you can change those colors here. So when you change them in the properties for the object, they're specific to the object. When you're changing them on the surface, you're applying them to the theme. So that's sort of what we have for Android. And we're very happy the way that this thing turned out and very happy with our moving to the native design surface.
Yeah. And I think the key thing is to recognize that if you're a Visual Studio developer on a Mac, this is all very comfortable for you. You're going to feel right at home because you've got your property grids with rich editing experiences for the types and the properties. Toolbox, of course. So yeah, that's nice to see all that.
And of course, you get fantastic support for everything that C# has, refactoring capabilities, all of these things. And of course, if you don't want to look at the designer, you can always look at the source, right? So Android people like to look at the AXML file, just like we like to look at the XAML file. So this is the...
Is that true?
Do they?
I see
James all the time editing the AXML, so yeah, okay. Who am I to doubt? Maybe, okay, so right. Anecdotes are not data. Yeah. I get it. James is a special bird.
That's right.
So now, let me just don't save this. It doesn't matter. And we got something similar for iOS, right? So for iOS, when you build your application, you also have a lot of customization options. Same thing that that I showed before, right? And here you configure some of the ways that you build your application, like floating point support, how you do it, how do you use a concurrent garbage collector. That, by the way, is a fantastic new feature that we introduced that reduces pause times. Ideal for intensive applications for games and other things. So we reduce all the pause times from the GC with this amazing technology. We can talk about that later. It's just fantastic, top-notch, high-tech, nerd.NET virtual machine engineering. So moving on. You're going to say something?
Moving on,
yeah. In iOS, there's two important files. So let me first launch the designer. And as I'm launching the designer, let me show you a couple of other files. The designer actually has to boot the whole iOS surface because we allow you to render live controls. So we have to actually start the whole simulator to let you render custom controls. So, that was fast. But let me show you before I go there two things that are core to the development of iOS applications. The first one is the application manifest. So this application manifest is called info.plist, and it describes the capabilities of your application. It describes what your application is going to do, the supported operating systems, right, the versions of the operating systems, whether you want to support iPhone or iPad, or work on both, the device orientations that your app supports, so the operating systems does some of that, the artwork for your app, so this integrates directly with the XE assets from iOS, so it's all native all the way down. The other file that is also very important is entitlements. These are things that you need to register with Apple for. So if your application uses iCloud, you get a register for that. Push notifications, you get a register key. Wallet, Siri, Apple Pay, all these things. So we make it very easy for you to activate those capabilities right from the IDE. And we'll take care of everything for you, and we'll have a great demo of this tomorrow with my session with James. So let's go back to the storyboard, and you'll notice that this does not look at all like an iPhone. This is an iOS app, but it doesn't look at all like an iPhone. And the reason for this is that it turns out that with recent versions of the iPad, you can multitask. I don't know if you have multitasked recently with the iPad, but essentially, applications now need to run on different configurations. They no longer run on specific size devices. You can still look at them this way, right? You can take what does it look like an iPhone 5, iPhone 6, what does it look like in an iPad? You can do that. But the way that that you design applications now is you have to design your applications and add this thing called constraints that says, when I have an object in the screen, how do I want it placed relative to other objects, right? So let me just add something here very quickly. So if I wanted to add an image view, I would put it here. And then I'm going to make this particular image view, I'm going to make it 128 by, that's perfect, 128. And now I'm going to add some rules to this thing. So I'm going to say, I want this to always have this height. So don't ever change it, right? And this is important because we're going to define rules of how objects are placed in the screen. So I'm going to say, just always place that thing and always lock the width. So I got those two. And then I want to say, actually anchor the top here and anchor this to the left. That means that regardless of the position of how the UI is built, it's always going to be on that top left corner. It doesn't matter if you rotate it or not. So that's why you're designing on this square surface. And as you move to different form factors, your application will size properly. Now, let me show you something that I think this is just this is just nice. I want to show you my design skills because I just learned to do this. So I wanted to be super hipster. And what I wanted to do here is you saw that I put the size in there to 128. So what I'm going to use is I'm going to use this capability in iOS called corner radius that essentially cuts things at 64. You go, oh, what happened there? And then I'm going to clip to bound. So obviously I messed up one of my constraints, but it doesn't matter. So now it's going to take up all the screen. And then where's my file? Where's my file? Where is my image view? Oh, here it is. Okay. Oh, I see what happened. I changed the constraints on the wrong object. Okay. So let me change the corner radius here instead. So now we have two corner radius. And then I'm going to clip the bounds. There we go. That is very pretty. And then here I'm just going to change the background color to something pretty. And you get the iOS color selector. So for those of you not familiar with macOS, that's what it looks like. And then I'm going to pick an
image.
Tasteful. What?
It's very tasteful colors.
Very tasteful colors, yes. And I'm going to pick an image here. So I just had my picture here. Oh, look at that, so nice, so pretty. The round circle there. I'm a design artist, except for the thing outside. One thing that is worth looking at is this document outline that shows you the view hierarchy of everything that you have on the screen. And also, it shows you the constraints. So actually, I did not mess up my constraints. I just touched the wrong object.
And you have the document outline on Android as well.
So. And we have the same thing. Now, one thing that is very common for .NET developers that is not very common in iOS is in iOS, you deal with this in a different way when you want to respond to events. But we've made it, we've embraced iOS, and we've C-sharpified it in the way. So when you double-click on one of these puppies, we essentially generate a method handler for you. When you double-click, we show this UI, and you can choose where to add your event handler. And when you add your event handler, we just get you that stuff right there. So you just write your code here and gets connected directly to the user interface. Now, the other thing that is worth keeping in mind when you're building this, or you're building or targeting iOS, is that iOS is no longer a platform for building apps. The reality is that your app now has multiple payloads. And let me show you what those are. So we support everything. So what is key here is that everything that you can do with the native toolkits on Android and iOS, you can do with Visual Studio for Mac. So when I go to my solution and I add a new project and I have either an Android and iOS project, I get this list of new options. You'll see that I now have this node called extensions. So these are capabilities that allow iOS applications to be extended. So your application is no longer doesn't live isolated. You can have, for example, audio unique extensions for processing audio. You can ship your own audio effects. You can have today notifications.
Yeah, custom keyboards.
Keyboards, yeah. Yes. What else is in there?
I think you cover extensions tomorrow.
iMessages, we cover extensions tomorrow? That's okay. Share extensions, so you know how you have that little button that you says share, and you want to register a share extension? The same thing. So we allow you to essentially do all of these things from your project. So everything in the platform is supported here. And this, if you add one of these puppies, right, like a document picker extensions, it would just document picker. That's a terrible name, doesn't matter. But it will add it right here, right? So now you got this puppy here, right? And the other thing that is interesting is you can have these two communicate with each other. So before I wrap up, I want to take a step back and show you one last thing. I don't care about this thing. So close solution, don't save. Oh, Jesus, all right. So I show you this multi-platform solution that was blank, right? So this is a plain canvas for the artist among you where you want to express yourself from the beginning and you really have a vision and this is your thing, you're in full zen. You want to reinvent the world, but one thing that we learn from our customer is just how common certain idioms and patterns are for mobile apps, right? So let me show you a little bit of this. One of the things that we do is not only we give you the user interface, but you can also add an ASP.NET backend. And the reason why we did this is as we work with our customers, we realize that a lot of you are essentially building user interfaces for some backend logic, right? The mobile application is really a a window into your business, right? And you want to connect that window to the back of your business. So I already have created this application. I didn't, I followed the advice of Scott Hanselman, get everything locally, don't depend on the network. So I had this project already created. And the difference between a blank project and the full application is that in this one, we've already captured a lot of the idioms that you need for sharing code. So we already have shared code for your user interface. We already have view models. We already have services for you, like, for example, storing data into the cloud. And this is the trick, right? What is super nice. This project is basically file new project, by the way. This is file new project.
You're totally undermining my claim.
No. You're undermining your claims? I'm sorry. But when you create this project, we've already wired up your client app to your backend app, to your .NET Core backend app. And we give you everything to get started. So this is the shared code. This is all your shared logic, all your backend logic, your shared code logic that you want to share across these ones. And we have things like observable objects and settings and things like that. So things that are very, very common. And then we got the two heads, right? We got the Android head, we got the iOS head, same thing as before. And you still have access to everything in there. So I think I want to wrap it up there and switch back to and continue with the next theme, which is the server piece.
That's great.
All right. Oh, no, there's one last thing that I wanted to show you. Apologies about that. Sorry, Joseph. I know that you're very excited. the other thing that I wanted to show you is we just said that this is not about mobile development. We have an architecture that spans also the desktop. And I wanted to show you one app that one of our writers in our documentation team wrote. So he was in the process of learning and documenting our Mac APIs, and he built this very, very nice application called Kimono Designer. And Kimono Designer is, let me just minimize this thing so you can see it in all its glory, right? And Kimono Designer is just a designer with a little bit of a twist. It's a designer that is used for generating code that you can run at runtime. So it doesn't generate an SVG file. It doesn't generate a PNG file. Instead, it generates code that runs at runtime. And you can use this for doing, for spicing up artwork that animates and things like that. So there's a whole rule system on this designer that you can use. And you can see here, so let me show you. I mean, I'm not an artist here, but.
Couldn't tell.
You couldn't tell, yeah, thank you. Thank you, Joseph. So this beautiful design, and here is the code that generates that ellipse, right? So you can see here that we're using the API, and it's a cross-platform API. Right now it says that it's macOS, but I can get the same code for iOS or tvOS. Let me select all of the objects here so you can see everything that is generated. But also, this is super nice, we can generate Windows Forms code. How do I get this thing to, let me see. Let me do this. Right. Here you can see that we can generate Windows Forms code that you can reuse, UWP code that you can reuse, Android code. So it generates a method that essentially does all of that stuff. And then you can parameterize it. So if you have custom artwork that you want to animate with special code, you can do it here. I'm not going to go into all the details, but it's an open source project. You can check it out. And it follows this architectural guidance that I told you. It's a shared code base. Let me quit this thing so you can see it. Let's change it. I don't care. It's the same thing, right? You have a core that is shared across all platforms, and then you got an Android UI, a Forms UI, an iOS UI, a Mac UI, a Windows UI, a UWP UI. So this is the architecture that you can follow, and it's a full desktop application. Some of these heads are still being, they're still under development, and again, it's one of our writers that built this. It's not my core team, but it is just fabulous. So let's switch gears now, and let's talk about the server development.
Sounds good. Thanks. So so as you can tell, Miguel is very passionate about client development and Mac development in general, which is great because I don't know if we can stress it enough. Visual Studio for Mac is written in C#, but makes great use of the native APIs. What I didn't want Miguel to do was to talk about to undermine how far along we are in our development of JuiceR, which is our Juice as a Service project that we've been operating on the
side. So, on the weekends, we're planning a new startup, and it's going to be about selling juice as a service.
So now if the investors watch this video and they're like, well, let's file a new project. But as Miguel mentioned, you have a solution here, and coming from File New Project, it's got the shared code, iOS and Android heads, and what Miguel glazed over was the fact that it also has the back end as well. It's a .NET Core back end. So you may or may not be aware that Microsoft has been working on a pretty big effort to make server code cross-platform with .NET Core. So that makes a lot of sense because C# is such a great language, not just for client development, but for the server as well. So powerful, productive Visual Studio plus C# is just an unbeatable combo. Mm-hmm. So obviously, server development features prominently inside Visual Studio for Mac. And here I have a .NET Core, ASP.NET Core web API that can be called from the iOS or Android front ends, and it's mostly C#, but you can see it has the JSON files that ASP.NET Core takes advantage of. NuGets, ASP.NET Core NuGets. I just remembered Miguel showed the NuGet gallery, so I'm not going to repeat that. So let me just run the app here. So I'm going to start the debugger here, and you get to see a little bit of what ASP.NET in VS for Mac is all about, and launching.
Now, this is interesting, Joseph. This just launched the simulator.
It did launch the simulator.
It launched the I/O simulator.
Yes. I was going to mention that in a moment.
Oh, sorry.
but there's a great setup, and you can ask that again in a minute. So,
Joseph, that is very interesting.
So, one nice thing about the templates that we provide for ASP.NET Core developers is that it ships with Swagger. So, if you want to explore a web API without a front end, I have Visual Studio in this case configured to go to to the root Swagger inside the project, and then I can go through and explore the API. It's all rendered very nicely. I can test out the API, post some data. But as Miguel mentioned, I have configured this instance of the solution to actually launch two applications at the same time, the server and a front end. So I can come into this iOS project and say I want to add some data here. We'll call this Howdy, because I'm a friendly kind of guy. If I save that, now I hit the first breakpoint that I've set inside the client. And so this is, this is on the iOS side, and it's a full debugger, very, as powerful as you expect. You can come in, inspect the variables. I can actually come in and change Howdy because that was silly. I want to put in a real title here. And now I've changed that data in the client. But what's really impressive is if I tell the debugger to continue, it hands it over to the server, right? So now the server is debugging multi-process. And now I'm looking inside my item controller, inside your solution explorer moved. But anyways, the item controller is inside of the .NET Core project, and I can come in and inspect my item right here and see that that the data that I changed, it made it across the wire. So that's great. That's a big deal, multi-process debugging. So it's really one of the most powerful features, I think, that Visual Studio has for client-server development. And to be able to bring that over to the Mac is the tip of the iceberg, really. But it's what makes VS for Mac. As Miguel mentioned, though, we're bringing over more code and more features, so there's quite a bit more to see here. If I go into the project over here, I can see some C# code. As Miguel mentioned, we brought over the editor. Oh, I already had the C# file open. And
it happens in the best families.
I know. So inside of the C#, inside of this class, you can see some of the power that has been brought in for the C# editors. And for instance, if I want to take this controller and add an interface to it, I might want to make it implement iDisposable. And you'll see that when I do that, I have the ability to come in and tell the C# editor that I want to fix up the code, right? So I've specified that the class is going to implement iDisposable. I haven't implemented iDisposable. I don't necessarily know how to implement iDisposable. I mean, I do know how to implement iDisposable.
Well, the reality,
it's very simple. You just go to Google, you search for iDisposable.
And you click on the purple link.
That's right.
Yes.
Right. It will always be purple.
It's the first and second match.
That's right.
All right.
Okay. So so I can tell us to do a quick fix and or not. Am I in the...
What did you do?
Well, it's in the debugger.
Oh, well, that's...
But I'm not in the... I don't have the...
All right. Okay, this is interesting.
What I'm going to do is just...
Move on.
Well, I'm going to have to stop Visual Studio and restart it, which is embarrassing in a demo, unless somebody can think of something better. Is the debugger in?
All right, just go to another file.
All right, I'll go to another.
Program.cs.
Program.cs.
Right there.
You think it's...
Yes. Montemagno was right. Yes.
I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know.
It's implicit. Yes. It is possible. All right.
All right. Well, you,
okay.
You
and now you get the error. You see?
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. You saved it.
Okay.
Okay. Right. Roslyn knows best. Essentially, right. Roslyn knows best.
Next time, James.
Oh, thank God.
This is you, buddy. All right.
All right. Okay.
Okay. Whew. And everything's back on track.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So iDisposable, right? Okay, so I have some options here for how to implement iDisposable, and what's really nice is that I can see previews of how it's going to be implemented. So I can pick any of these that I like, and there it is. Now it's in place. I can come in, and if I don't like the way that they've named, for instance, this member variable, I can, it's not a quick fix, there's nothing wrong with it.
It's
I can refactor it.
Command R, yeah. Yep.
So I can say what I'm going to...
Command R, just embrace your Emacs. Your Emacs.
That's right. Okay, Emacs Command R. You will all get intimately familiar with Command R and many commands. Anyways, all right, so Command R. Let me go back here. Command R, just like you said.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There.
Sup.
Yeah.
Sup, bro.
Real dispose. Okay. All right, so anyways, refactoring, renaming, it's nice. It's powerful. Thank you, Roslyn.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm not going to do that. That's terrible. Oh, God. This is not a real escape button.
We'll tell you. The problem is that we're using a machine without an escape button.
That did not feel right. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That was not an escape button at all.
The touch bar takes a little getting used to, but I love the touch bar. It's a fantastic touch bar. Okay. I love the touch bar.
All right. Okay. Anyways, I'm sorry you had to witness that. Okay. Anyways, there's lots of other powerful quick fixes and refactoring in here. For instance, I can come in and say I want to define a new field. I'm going to call it foo because that's a great name for a field. I'll assign a value because I can do that. And, it's a field. That's a poor idea. Never do it as a field. Let's say I came in and I said, I'm going to use my foo string inside the method. String value doesn't matter. And you can see now I have the indicator there that, I've made another mistake. Now, come in and look at quick fix. There's a few options for what it can do. It knows I've done something wrong. Maybe I meant for, But in particular, probably what it's right about is the most important thing is that I have a field and I never used it, right? But I did that on purpose, so I'm going to suppress that error because you're not the boss of me.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
That's what my daughter says, yeah.
So... So C# editing, very powerful. Did I skip over any features you want to show in there?
Well, I think this is great. I think one of the feedbacks that we get is, why is it missing?
Yes.
Why is it missing
Visual Studio does X, refactorings in particular, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
I think that a lot of the feedback that we get is, why is their key bindings different? But generally, the refactoring capabilities that we have with Roslyn are very good.
Yeah.
And we've also integrated Refactoring Essentials, which is a collection of refactoring tools for every common scenario that you can put here. They're all available through the menu. I don't think we want to go through that, but we've put a lot of work into that. It's just fantastic.
So aside from the C# editing features, we also have brought over more parts of the editor.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Yeah. So we
forgot about that.
Mm-hmm. So we now have Visual Studio's HTML editor. We have their CSS editor. Let me open up some CSS here so you can see that I can come in and
Yeah, if you remember, if you use, again, it goes, some of the things that happen when say, well, it's just a rebranding is, no, actually, we've taken a lot of the code. So,
yeah.
You know, if you look at, if you only look at what happened since yesterday, yes.
Yeah.
If you look at what happened in the course of a year, we've brought a lot of the code over to Visual Studio for Mac.
I don't think you have to qualify that so much, because you know a lot of people watched closely, and a lot of people, this is probably their first exposure on the Mac.
Well, the thing is that to me, I always struggle with my engineers because we release a product, let's say it's version 1, and then we release 1.1, 1.1.1, 1.1.1.2.
And then the blinders are on.
1.1.1.3. Yeah. And then I say, guys, we got to rename this 2.0. It's like, well, no, it's just there's not that many changes from last week.
Yeah.
So we're stuck in this world where we're like 1.1.1.34. It's like, guys, this is a new product, right? Anyways.
So powerful HTML, CSS editing, JSON in particular is cute. I'm going to show that if I come into, for instance, the bower.json file. JSON editing inside Visual Studio is schema aware. So if I want to come in and add some values here, it knows the bower file will let me specify authors. And authors can be a string or it can be an array. So I'm going to say, well, we'll go ahead and give Miguel some credit for this. And of course, I'll take credit. So anyway, so it's nice to see all of that rich editing, and you should expect to see all of that landing.
Yeah.
And then of course, once you're ready to deploy your .NET Core solutions, we've integrated the ability to publish directly to Azure from right inside the IDE.
The best cloud for .NET deployments.
That's right.
No questions.
Obviously.
Yes. Yeah. So well, thank you very much, Joseph. Yeah. Let me switch back to this thing. Let me switch back to this thing.
It's there, dude.
Oh, there it is. All right. So just to wrap up, we have great support for ASP.NET Core, both web pages, websites. One of the capabilities that we're most proud of is that we brought multi-process debugging. And we do multi-process debugging between the iOS apps, the extensions, the Android app, the server apps, anything that you can debug, we can throw at the thing, and we'll debug it for you. We're bringing the web tools from Visual Studio that you know and love, and we're also adding Azure Publish. But there's a lot more today, and let me bring GB Evin, Principal Software Engineering Manager for the Unity tools in Visual Studio. So please help me welcome GB.
Thank you. Could you punch 7, please?
Yes, you are number 7.
Yes. All right. So this is Unity. If you haven't heard about Unity yet, that would be very strange. But it's a powerful 2D and creation tool to create games for all major platforms, mobiles, consoles, desktops, AR, VR, MR devices, and even the web. The game development with Unity workload in Visual Studio on Windows is amongst our most popular workload, and I'm very happy to announce that we've taken our tools for Unity from Visual Studio, and they're included in the box in Visual Studio for Mac at GA. One thing to note is that you'll need the next stable version of Unity, Unity 5.6.1, which is due in the next few days. If you want to trade right now, you'll need to try a patch release, but I recommend you wait for the next stable version.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's have a look at how they work together. This is Unity with Unity's simple project, where you basically fly a jet through rings in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
I configured Visual Studio for Mac to be Unity script editor. So if I open a C# file inside Unity, it will open inside Visual Studio for Mac.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Visual Studio for Mac that Miguel presented with all the nice features. So let's have a look at a few specific features for Unity developers. The first one that you can notice is the solution pad. Unity has its own concept of what a project is. It's basically based on a folder hierarchy. And thanks to the great capabilities of Visual Studio for Mac to extend the IDE, we've been able to completely reshape the solution pad and show you your project exactly like Unity is doing, making it easier for you to find your scripts and navigate your projects. Let's have a look at debugging. All right, I want to put a breakpoint when the plane takes off and the landing gear rises. Mm-hmm. So let's look for the landing gear.
Oh, and that is a very nice key combination that you pressed. I don't know if you noticed.
It's command dot.
Command dot, and you start typing, and it has all the idioms that you expect to locate methods, files, go to a specific line, and so on.
I put a breakpoint when the gear is raised. Mm-hmm. I just have to click play to attach the debugger to Unity. In Unity, I just have to press play to start the game and take off. All right. I'm inside Visual Studio for Mac. My breakpoint works. I can step. I can access my locals, my core stack, everything you expect from a modern .NET debugger. Let's resume, detach, stop the game. Another Unity-specific feature that I want to show in Visual Studio for Mac, you'll notice that we're in a special type that extends mono behavior. Mono behavior is a special type for Unity. It recognizes them, and it recognizes methods inside of them. So start and update are Unity messages. They're methods that are called from the game engine. There's a list of them. You have to remember them all the time. Some of them have a confusing name. And we brought completion for Unity messages from the tools for Unity on Windows to Mac, thanks to Roslyn. That says that I want to implement a collision on the landing gear. I just have to type on collision, enter, press enter. I have my method. I just have to write my code.
Yeah, so I think what is key here is that Unity uses a model that is not exactly the same that C# developers use. And what we've done is that Visual Studio actually follows the Unity idioms. And we provide code completion not only for C#, but Unity augmented C#, right? Or Unity idiomatic C#.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Quickly, another feature, code coloration for shaders. It's only code coloration, but it definitely helps to read and write shaders, which can be sometimes quite dense. And we brought the Unity documentation directly into the IDE. Just select the type you're interested in, trigger a shortcut, and you're reading the documentation for what a rigid body means inside Unity.
Very nice.
All right. So that's a quick overview of the tools for Unity inside Visual Studio for Mac at GA. If you want to learn more about them, visit us in the expo hall. We have a kiosk there, and my team is there if you have any questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Jebe. Pleasure. So like Jeve was saying, Unity development is one of the hottest workloads for Visual Studio, and we've brought the same experience from Windows to the Mac, so you can expect the same capabilities across the board. Now, I want to switch gears a little bit and show you a piece of technology that you might have not used before, which is called workbooks. So workbooks is a capability that is included with both Visual Studio for Mac and Visual Studio on Windows. I happen to be on a Mac today, so I'm going to show you this technology on. On the Mac, but you get the same experience on Windows. Now, some of you might have seen this last year when we talked about Xamarin. But it's worth doing a refresher. So Xamarin Workbooks is a system where you can do interactive C# coding. I was having dinner a couple of nights ago with a good friend of mine, and she was telling me that sometimes she doesn't want to say file new project to test an API or to do some data manipulation or to do some processing. So she uses Jupyter notebooks. Is it called Jupyter now? Yeah, Jupyter notebooks, and. And it's a pain point that a lot of us have. She did not know that workbooks existed, so I was very happy to give her my demo. But let me show you what it is. You can essentially run, you can essentially type C# code here. And the way that you have to think about it, it's a little bit like a spreadsheet. I can come here and say, for example, a plus 3. And then if I go here and I say, well, actually, that's a 2, it updates all the values, right? So it's a little bit like a spreadsheet for C#. It's live coding for C#. And you can do all kinds of interesting things. For example, you can call this thing, and I can say directory.getFiles. So let me list the files in my home directory, desktop. And I have maybe too many files. Let me see. OK, that's a lot. So let me just pick the, let me go and make a change here. I just want to get the PNG files. No, that's pretty good. Avatar. That happens to be my avatar on Twitter. It would be very nice to have network support right about now. Can I join this one?
No, no, if you have enough time to configure.
All right. Network. Don't I have enough time to configure the network? All right. OK. Yes, I do have time to configure the network. Guys, we're going to make this happen. Is it going to happen? Now, like I said, while this thing is loading, so essentially you can type any kind of C# code here, and you can use these to explore the API. For example, I can just type here some HTTP, www.google.com. And what it does, this shows, it shows you this URL, and you'll see that the result is rendered as 2-string, right? But I can choose instead to show the representation of that C# has. So it's essentially like what you would get on the debugger if you open it manually. Now, I do have this thing now, so I can go and add a NuGet package. So I can say Skia Sharp, which is our 2D graphics library that we've made cross-platform, works on every platform, server, client, desktop, everything. It's a high-performance graphics library, the same one that powers Android and powers Chrome. So. Let me show you what I can do with this thing so you can get a feeling for what you can do with Skia. Remember that I had my file here, the directory get files? So I can just do, for example, let's change this a little bit from, I can say directory.getFiles users Miguel desktop. And then I'm going to use a link expression. So I'm going to say from file. In this things where file ends with. I want to show you that this is doing code completion and is showing you the hint. This is actually the same editor that powers VS Code. This is Monaco, the Monaco editor. So I'm going to say pick this things or file ends with JPG, select file. Right? Oh, I made a bunch of mess. What did I do? Well, first of all, what the hell was I typing there? All right, there it is. So I got two of these things. I don't know what language I was typing. I knew it was, I don't want to embarrass myself. So these are my my images, right? These are my images. Let me just assign it to a variable here, I have it there. Now, what I'm going to do is, let me show you, SK bitmap decode, and I'm going to say decode read all bytes for the first file. Images first, right? So this just loaded whatever file I had on the desktop. I hope I don't have anything embarrassing. I can do something a little more interesting. Instead of having this just load this file, you see that, I don't know if you noticed, this I think is key. I just imported a NuGet package that defined its own custom data type called skbitmap, and workbooks magically recognize this data type. It didn't magically recognize that the NuGet now has a payload that says this is how you render a bitmap into a workbook. So you can now have NuGet packages that have custom renderers that show this stuff. And so that's how you can get an image inline here. Now, let's do something a little bit more interesting from X in files, in images. Select. And instead of doing this, I'm just going to do X, right? Does that sound about right, Joseph?
Sure.
Oh, what is that? Oh, look at that.
Wow.
It's beautiful. It's decided to render this as an IEnumerable. So this is an IEnumerable, right? I can show it as an IEnumerable. I can just show it as a result like that, right? If I don't want to do that, I can say, well, to array, just give me this as an array, well, which is also an IEnumerable. So maybe I'm not winning anything. What is this? To render is not going to array. What? Oh, yeah, it's select. Yeah, you got to put this puppy here. But it doesn't matter, right? And now you have there as an array, and then you can say, well, I don't want to look at it this way. I want to look at it as an object members. And these are the properties of an array that you've seen before. Now, we are very, very excited about workbooks, not only for the capabilities of exploring an API, right? For example, I can say, now that I have my bitmap, right, it's like, what methods can I call on this puppy? What is it called? sk-bitmap.decode files.first, right? Was that the method that I called? No, what is it called? What did I call it? Images. Oh, images? Yeah, so you got this thing here, and let me assign this to bitmap. And we're going to run out of variables, so maybe this time, good time to use foobar. And now I can do things like bitmap.rescale, what is it called? Resize, there it is. So it's great for exploring APIs, and here, for example, it tells me it needs a new SK image info. So I can just do that. And then there's a couple of overloads. That's the one that I'm looking for. And then an SK bitmap resize method. And there's a bunch of resize methods. I'll just pick the first one. And there we go.
So it's great for exploring.
Yes.
We also actually have workbooks online that even cover Skia Sharp. So if people want to learn those 2D APIs.
Right, that is correct. Yeah. So the other thing that we have is we've been moving a lot of our documentation to workbooks. One thing that I haven't shown you is right now you're thinking, well, that's just a C# shell. You're typing some code, you get some results, rich results, amazing results. But we have a lot of workbooks for you to try. So things that explore Azure, that explore Android. You might not have noticed this. Let me show you this. There's this little selector here. So you can actually run workbooks against the console, against an iOS application, right? And you can just change this, and boom, it reloads it and runs it on the target device. So you can actually explore iOS APIs, Android APIs, and on Windows, Windows APIs, right? But let me show you one thing while this thing boots. We also have this tutorial for C#, so learn to build async. So we have tutorials on asyncs, on collections. What is new in C# 6? What is new in C# 7, right? So let me give you a taste of C# 7. We can ignore the iOS thing. But essentially, we turned the blog post on what is new with C# 7, and we turned it into a workbook. And you'll notice something. There's a bunch of text here, right? And it's actually editable. This is so cool. So what you can do is not only you have these cells where you execute code, right? So right now I'm executing the code, and here I'm showing how now you can have these out variables here. But it continues to be live. It's a little bit like a spreadsheet, right? But you can have these annotations in line. And the way that you do, I'm just going to go to the bottom to show you how it's done, is you can just add a new cell, right? So we can say, for example, 1+2, right? And then we can say, we can add a little one of these things and say, the above will show you how to add some text. And the nice thing is that the output of this thing, let me show you this. This is super cool. Let me open a window here. I'm still a command line guy, so if you will excuse me, and also I use Norton Commander. If you look at the output, look at this thing. You know what this is?
It's Markdown.
It's all Markdown. Did you see that? Isn't that amazing? All you have to do is flag your code with tick, 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 C#, and that becomes executable code. Thank you, sir. So we're using this for two things, and there's a syntax error on why this thing didn't run up to this point. It's telling me that somebody messed up here. But that might be me. What? Oh, please wrap up? Okay, sorry. Okay, we're running. Oh, my goodness. I'm very sorry, guys. We have a lot more to talk about, and we didn't get to it. All right. In addition to Visual Studio 1.0 for Mac, I'm sorry we're not going to be able to do the demos, but we got Docker support, So debug across multiple.
Yeah, can I? Yeah, I mean, you saw it in the demo this morning. It was an amazing collaboration with the team. Steve's here, and I mean, what's exciting to see is Visual Studio teams taking the initiative when they're developing features for Visual Studio to develop for Visual Studio for Mac in tandem. So the same demo that you saw this morning in the keynote, you have that same ability inside Visual Studio for Mac. You can go into your project, add a Docker configuration, do multi-configuration debugging. Pretty amazing.
Apologies, and I want to apologize particularly to Michaela Hutchinson, our principal PM, who had a beautiful demo on Azure Functions. I'll do it tomorrow on the Xamarin session, debugging Azure Functions and also IoT. So we have a whole story on IoT, connecting to Azure IoT, deploying to Raspberry Pi that is here and does.
And we'll be there tomorrow.
And we will be there tomorrow. I apologize, I did not see the clock.
All right, that's awesome.
And thank you very much for coming to our presentation today.